Good morning, friends. Welcome back to the Rotobahn podcast. Pete Davidson here. As always, I'm a day late with this episode. Was going to do it yesterday. The problem is doing a first round wrap up is sort of hard when the first round hasn't completed. It's funny. I know some people are already in like third, fourth round of their drafts. They're moving fast. I know the bulk of you haven't started yet. I mean, I only have one league that starts this quick. Most of my leagues, you get a week, a month to get ready. People aren't that jazzed to draft right away. And people like to have time to put their boards together because I think, you know, it's two sides. I think some people want time to actually ruminate and think and really move the pieces around the chessboard, see what landing spots did to their board. And then I think other people want to see ADP. Like they want not necessarily to form their own opinions, although I think in a lot of cases that's what people are doing. But I think people just want to know what the market is. They want to see established ADP so they can move around the board more effectively, get more of what they want. Or trade back and still get a lot of what they want and acquire more assets. So I can see why ADP is something you'd want. I certainly would love some right now. I'd like some intel on what my league mates are going to be doing. But it has been a fun draft. It's been tediously slow. There's no clock, so some people are sitting on the clock. People will trade for a pick and then sit on the pick. It's, you know, typical stuff. But hey, it's a rookie draft. That's the way it goes. Quick synopsis. I promised to do a podcast on this to a couple of people, and I'm going to come through on that. Maybe I will make it part of tomorrow's pod. Basically, I'm in the middle of a rebuild, but right now I've got maybe a half hour tops, so I don't want to get into that. And I want to talk a little bit about every pick that's been made in this draft so far. I've been a little tight-fisted on letting out my rankings this year. Part of it is because now that I'm not getting currently paid to do content for anybody. And part of the thing I've enjoyed about getting back to being just, you know, I mean, I still do stuff. I still do the podcast and stuff like that. But primarily for the last year, I've just been a fantasy player again for the first time in over a decade. And I don't feel like I lost the love, but I'm getting the love back the way it used to be. And it's a lot of fun to just play for the sake of playing, being able to keep your sleepers to yourself and stuff like that. So it's been, I mean, I've always had skin in the game. I've always been a content person who plays the game a lot. So it's, you know, I've never been someone who's detached. But it's nice to just focus on playing fantasy for a while. Enough stuff about me. Let's get into this thing. So this is the UDPL, the Ultimate Dynasty Podcasters League. There are a lot of really smart guys in this league. We don't have any female GMs, so I got away with guys there. We've got two teams from Dynasty Nerds in here. There's a team from Roto World. I get a team. The Fantasy Father, Doug Eddy, very strong player. The open bar guys are in here. Tyler is obviously the GM, very strong owner. Izzy's a strong owner. The Bauer Club, they know what they're doing. The guys from Dynasty Warfare, they've been good as well. Recent title they've dropped. So there's just, you know, even, you know, this is not a league where you can like take a quick glance and know who's good and who's bad, because there's people who are rebuilding because they came in the league and took over a team and whatnot. So this is, you know, it's a public facing league, but I don't think you can just like take a look at the league and figure out who's good and who's bad, just for what it's worth. I've been in this league since the beginning. I've made bowls, I've won titles. And as I said, I'm in my first, well, really, this is my first rebuild I've ever done in Dynasty. I've never rebuilt a team before. I basically tried to just keep them going so I don't have to rebuild. In this league, I think I won the title in 22, 21. And I realized that so many people were in rebuild mode in 22. They were just, you know, actually, truthfully, 20, 21, and 22. I've never been in a league that had so many teams rebuilding at the same time. Like, getting into the playoffs, if you were, like, you know, there were really only 8 teams that were even trying. So, like, missing the playoffs, it's like, oh my gosh, I was, like, you know, team 7 or, you know, or 8 out of 8. So it was brutal not making the playoffs when you've got, you know, four or five teams. I mean, last season, I was sort of, I think, like the fifth team to sort of give up on the season. Now, I didn't go in tanking, but I was 1-3. I had a really high point total. I think I was top three or four in points, but I just wasn't getting wins. And I just finally said, you know what? Rather than lean in, give up assets to try to get back into this thing, I'm going to go the other way. Anyway. This draft has been interesting. It started interesting. At the top spot, the team led by Chief Sosa is in a major rebuild, and it has absolutely nothing to do with him. He came in, and this team was in shambles, and he really took it down to the screws. So he had the first pick and did not take Caleb. He took Marvin Harrison. I would have taken Caleb personally. It's a super flex league, but in a rebuild, I can understand why you might go Harrison. I can. This guy's got every intention of being high in the draft next year. He will have more chances to take quarterbacks. He's doing everything. He's just accumulating assets. So I think for him, he felt this was a good long-term asset. You're not going to get a guy like Harrison very often. Meanwhile, the Caleb Williams of the world is usually one in every draft. I assume that was his logic. I would have gone Caleb personally. But Harrison, I do think we get caught up in comparing these guys to each other, and sometimes people sit there and compare like Harrison to, neighbors. Let's just use neighbors. And no, of course neighbors separates better than Harrison. Harrison's also like much bigger. Like Harrison brings a whole new level of problems to the table. If you're a defensive back, I mean, the guy's, he's 210 pounds, 6'3". And he runs very well. So this is a guy who brings everything to the table. Neighbors is a solid 10 pounds lighter. They're just different players. Marvin Harrison's a classic receiver. He catches the ball beautifully with his hands. He can body catch when he needs to. I can understand why people are just completely enamored with Marvin Harrison Jr. So I don't have a problem with the pick, even though it's not what I would have done. Moving on to Caleb Williams. I really like the player. I'm a little concerned that he's had so much time to become big in the head. I don't know enough about the guy to know how well he's going to handle it. He seems like he's got his head on straight, but it's just, I don't know. The thing about being a great NFL quarterback is that you can't get Zach Wilsonized. You can't let it can't happen to you that you let your head get too big. And the Jets didn't do anything to stop it. They just gave him the job before he even stepped on the practice field. It was just a bad paradigm. Now Williams has that same thing. Now Williams is a little bit further along than Zach Wilson was. He played tougher competition. He had to do a lot more thinking on the field. When I watch Caleb Williams, I understand the Mahomes stuff. I think he's sort of in that delta between Holmes and Aaron Rodgers. The guy I always think about when I watch Caleb is Aaron Rodgers. Now, the difference is he's not going to have multiple seasons to sit there and learn and change his throwing motion. Not that his throwing motion needs to be changed, but, for people who want a good exercise, and for those who don't know this, go back and look at Aaron Rodgers' film his senior year. Now, it's eye-popping stuff, okay? I mean, it's great film, but he's not the same player you see today. He's not the same player you saw when he stepped on the field, when he was finally the starter. During those seasons that he sat behind Favre, Aaron Rodgers retooled his mechanics. He was a much smoother thrower of the football when he came out of that. If you go back and watch the film at Cal, he had this high carriage. He threw everything from his ear. I think he was like a Dan Marino, fan or something like that. But when he lost that and he dropped the football, he smooths his throwing motion out. There's more velocity on the football, and you see that great player that he became. But to me, Williams and Rodgers are very similar. My question is, will Williams be able to put in the time in his craft that Rodgers was afforded? Because he's not going to have that time in the dark where nobody's looking, where he gets to just work on his game. He's going to have to go do it in public with the lights on. It's harder to do. Now, the benefit Williams has, and Rodgers had this as well, because Rodgers stepped into a team that was ready-made. He didn't, and we can get into the QB paradigm another time, but these elite QBs get punished. They get punished for being good. They have to go to these teams where there's no support. I mean, if Derek May has to start this year, that's not good. You know, if Jane Daniels is going to go and start from the drop, he's going to probably have to use his wheels more than we'd like. Although Daniels does have some things to work with. Caleb breaks the paradigm because, yeah, he went number one, but he went to a team that lucked into the pick. I mean, how many guys go number one and then get a guy like Odunze drafted for them in the top 10 that same year? So, and then, you know, obviously he's got Keen and he's got multiple tight ends. He's got multiple backs. So he's got all these weapons. I mean, Odunze's probably going to be what, the third receiver coming out of the box? Odunze's your third receiver. You've got an embarrassment of riches. So Williams isn't facing that rookie QB dip that a lot of these guys are, where you're going to have to do it yourself and you're going to have to do it with your legs. This guy can come in, play smart and tight right from the drop, and he'll be fine. So, you know, to me, Williams is a no-brainer. Dynasty Rich was sitting there in the two spots, snatched him right up before he could get to me. I would have taken him for what it's worth. So first two picks in the draft, Marvin Harrison, Caleb Williams. I'm up with the third pick. I take Neighbors. Now, Malik Neighbors is just a very special talent. I have seen very few people in my life who separate like this guy. He just separates. His gear, when the ball is in the air, I mean, watch this guy on some of these plays. He is just separating with the ball in the air every time. Forget about the initial separation he got on the route. When it comes time to chase down the ball, this guy separates. He pulls ahead whoever's defending him. I've seen him do it to like 50 guys. It's unbelievable. So while I do have some concerns about Neighbors, mostly just in terms of the way he receives the football, ironic in that he is a, quote, receiver, he's a little bit of a body catcher. He's got a little, you know, and look, Antonio Brown was a body catcher, okay? Granted, Antonio Brown was a great body catcher. I mean, he was great at it. Very few people use their body to catch the football the way Antonio Brown did. And when Antonio Brown needed to make a hands catch, he generally could. And that's what Neighbors does show on film. When he gets stretched out and needs to make a great play with his hands, he can do it. I don't like the way he catches with his hands, though. Too close to his body. He's sort of a face catcher sometimes when he doesn't really need to. And he will work hard to catch it with his body. Now, again, big problem if you don't separate like a blanker. This guy separates like nobody's business. He's going to give his quarterback throwing windows. Even as a Giant, if he's going to be, you know, Drew Locke and Daniel Jones, these are not the greatest quarterbacks in the world. Locke probably a little bit better in terms of throwing into windows. Although Jones a little bit better from the neck up, just not being, you know, Drew Locke. But you know what? The Giants have unsettled, mediocre to bad quarterback situation, but it's not like the guys are total dogs that don't have any talent. Moreover, the Giants, I mean, who's out-targeting this guy in the Giants? Jalen Hyatt? You know, Wandale Robinson? Come on, that's not happening. And they got rid of Saquon, so, you know, they've got a back that, I mean, Singletary's a decent little back, but you're not going out of your way to get Singletary touches when you've got Neighbors. Neighbors is going to be the sun, okay? The rest of the offense is the solar system. So, that kind of separation, early volume, I just could not take Neighbors. So just to sum up again, Harrison, Caleb, Neighbors, nothing too shocking there. Fourth pick is where the action started. Tyler, the guy who runs the league, traded up for the fourth spot. I'm not going to go through the details of every trade. We'll be here for hours. But he moved up to get Daniels. Well, actually, this trade was sort of simple. He basically gave up Kyler to get Daniels. Ballsy move. I'm sitting here thinking, would I have done that? I'm honestly not sure. That's not the kind of move I would have even contemplated to make, to be honest. But Tyler loves dealing, man. He is a trading fool in a good way. Tyler's actually the person who started my rebuild. I traded Josh Allen to him. So he takes Daniels, and so, you know, Daniels is the QB2. Next pick was another trade, and J.J. McCarthy goes five. Obviously, that's landing spot oriented. Gutsy move. I don't have a problem with it. I think the thing about McCarthy that I think is sort of a hidden gem, and I'm sure there's some smart dynasty guys who are talking about this somewhere, but McCarthy on a team with all those weapons and his legs, this guy, for fantasy purposes, it's tough to see him failing early on because he's going to give you foot points plus all of those monster weapons. It's going to be hard for him to fail. Now, I don't know that he's going to start over Darnold like week one. Maybe he won't. Maybe it'll take a half a season. Maybe Darnold. I mean, Darnold with these weapons, who knows? Darnold can run too. So who knows? I don't know what their philosophy is going to be with McCarthy. I do think that once he gets in there, he's going to be better for fantasy than people think because he's going to run. Now, just while we're here, I think McCarthy's a phenomenal draft and trade guy. Trade him early in his career when he's running and the fantasy points are really high, and trade him before he slows down and stops running. I think he's a very good asset in that sense. So, again, Harrison, Williams, Neighbors, Daniels. I'm going to post this on Twitter and on the site, by the way. Drake May's the next guy up. Fantasy Father traded into the six hole. He made a big, crazy trade, actually. He also traded into the seventh hole. So he takes May and Odunze. Now, I suppose you can say the order is soft. Who actually is the six and who's actually the seventh? We'll say May because he took May first, but he made these picks back to back. I don't have a problem with the May pick. The one thing about May that I really believe is that he's going to be better served sitting year one. I hope the Patriots do that for him. And I say that not just because I think he could use a year. I don't know if there's anybody in this class other than Caleb who couldn't use the year. Heck, even Caleb could use the year. I'm a big believer that quarterbacks sitting and learning for a period of time is important. Now, that period of time can be a couple weeks. It can be a half a season. It can be a season. It can be two seasons. It depends on the situation, on the player, all that stuff. But one underrated aspect to all of this is it's not just about the player. It's about the team, too. Can the team support a learning quarterback? Some teams can. Some teams can protect, and they have receivers. So, okay, I don't mind my quarterback learning if he's not under duress constantly. But when your quarterback's under duress, they're learning the wrong things. They're learning self-protection. They're not learning reading defenses, or at least not to the extent you want them to. We've seen that with a ton of guys. I don't need to go through the names. So, for me, I'd like to see New England add more weapons, get some better deep pieces before you throw May out there. I like the idea of Brissett playing games in New England because, hey, first of all, Brissett is a good quarterback. I mean, I'm surprised that somebody, like Atlanta could have saved all their money. They could have not signed Cousins. They could have not taken Penix. They could have just signed Jacoby Brissett and gone that way, and they probably would have been better off. We can talk about the Atlanta thing some other time. The irony is I actually like Penix, and I think Cousins is a good quarterback. They didn't need to overload for both. Anyway, so the May pick is fine. I like the May pick. I do hope New England doesn't rush him because I just think he's one of these guys where the benefits of learning are great. Now, the other side of it is you don't want to have May sitting around too long because he's a big talent and there are two sides to the coin. It helps to be all the way up to speed before you step on the field, but you also don't want to wait too long because you need those reps. There's a paradox in there, and it's all about the player. Coach the player in front of you. Make sure he's up to speed. As soon as he is, unless there's a compelling reason not to get him on the field, you get his ass on the field. Anyway, so May is in the house for Doug, and then he takes Odunze. Now, in the seventh spot, I mean, I think Odunze's the steal of the draft so far. I think Odunze was absolutely viable where I selected at three. I did give slight thought to Odunze over Neighbors before the draft started. I was rolling it around in my head. I have to be honest, when I got on the clock, it was Neighbors. It was always Neighbors. The only question was, would I trade out of the spot? I did give it a whirl. Nobody was really biting. I don't know why. Probably because I wanted a lot. But there just wasn't a lot of action. It's probably because everybody who was trading was really working for a quarterback. This league is like the NFL. People want those rookie quarterbacks. you know, Odunze to me, I just love the pick. I love the pick. I think there are parallels from Odunze to Justin Jefferson. I think he's just incredibly sure-footed. If this guy wasn't a deep threat, if he didn't have deep game, if he didn't have an assortment of moves to get deep, if he didn't get off the line so well, forget about that because that's important for all levels. But this guy doesn't have to, I mean, he's a big-time deep threat, but he doesn't even have to be. If this guy was more of a, you know, shallow intermediate guy, he's still a first-round pick. He would be a first-round pick as a high-end possession guy who can, you know, be a playmaker and whatever. But in addition to all of that, he can take the top off. This guy can make plays downfield. He can go up and get it. There is nothing he can't do. Love him. So I think really right up to 7, there were stud players on the board. Now the 8th pick was a little bit of a heartbreaker for me because I'm sitting in the 9 hole hoping this guy will get to me, but not hoping so much that I was willing to really move up. Brock Bowers is the 8th overall pick. He goes to the open bar. Love those guys. Good players, great guys. Gabe and Mike Check, just for, in case you guys don't know those guys. So Bowers, I don't know, you know, I'm not sure what their rationale was for taking him. I think he's the best player on the board. For people who are scared off with the whole Raiders thing, because they took Mayer last year and Bowers this year, I think the Bowers pick conceivably hurts Mayer because it's going to make it hard, even harder for him to get targets. I don't know how much they're going to do for Mayer to, like, get him the ball now when they have Bowers, but these two guys don't play the same position is the quick way to explain it. One is going to be in line, that's Mayer, and one's going to be offensive weapon, that's Bowers. I think, based on what I'm seeing, Bowers is going to be part running back. He's going to be like Deebo Samuel. This guy's going to get carries. He's going to get screens. He's going to get like tunnel screens. He's going to get drags, all kinds of stuff just to get him the football. But here's the thing. And here's what's really important with Brock Bowers. Do not get hung up on all these schemed touches, because when this guy needs to earn the target, he can do it. I mean, big time he can do it. So I love Brock Bowers. I don't know if the Raiders made a good pick or not. We'll have to sort of judge that over time, but they committed to this guy. Do not worry about the Mayer thing. These guys don't play the same position. I do think Bowers could hurt Mayer a little bit. I don't think Mayer hurts Bowers at all. Okay. Love the pick. So now I'm up in the 9 hole. I was praying for Odunze or Bowers. Neither one of them got to me. They're right in front of me. I could have moved up. Maybe I should have. Here's the thing. I take Brian Thomas. Now I thought about Brooks and Worthy, to be honest. I gave both of them consideration. And I gave Trey Benson some consideration. In the end, Brian Thomas is unique and he's special. And the landing spot, I don't know if anybody had got a better landing spot than Brian Thomas. Now, could he have gotten an even better one? Yeah, maybe. I think he would have been a phenomenal fit for Josh Allen, and I think obviously if somehow Kansas City had been able to get this guy, he could have reset that offense in some ways. Let's deal with where he is. He's in Jacksonville. Jacksonville, obviously they signed Gabe Davis, but there's still a real opening for that elite deep threat on this offense. This guy's not Gabe Davis. This guy runs 4.3 change. He's 6'3". He is big. He's got strength. And he is, he's an interesting player. He's not sudden. You can see him having to gather himself. But once he does, he's sort of sudden. This guy takes off quickly and he gets up to speed quickly. It's like he's got an inertia thing, which a lot of big players do, and especially long body guys do. But he's also very fast once he gets moving. And it's not build up speed the way you think it would be. You can see some plays down by the goal line where he'll catch the deep ball, spin around, and take off from multiple defenders. This guy is just, he's unique. And here's the thing I like about Brian Thomas. I was sold on him before landing spot. Landing spot's important for him. I think if he went to a team where he needs to be the wide receiver one and he needs to run the full route tree and deal with number one corners, it could be a problem, at least early on. But, you know, this guy could end up being Mike Evans with speed. He doesn't have the ball skills that Mike Evans has. He isn't alpha at the catch point the way Mike Evans is. But he can do route work the way Evans does. And unlike Evans, who's, you know, 4'5 and change, this guy's, you know, 4'3 and change. It's a different animal. So you can see with Thomas, we've talked about this in the past, guys like Derrick Henry. We talked about it with Anthony Richardson last year. Why, you know, I was saying, just don't get hung up on the downside of Richardson. Focus on the ceiling, because the ceiling's absurd. Okay? Same kind of thing with Brian Thomas. And here's the thing I love about the landing spot. You got a team that can protect. You've got a team that can run. You've got a team that throws really effectively inside and in the tight areas. They're really good at throwing to Ingram in short. They're really good at getting Zay Jones open. They're really good at isolating Christian Kirk and getting him matchups. They spread the field left and right. They play good horizontal offense and they run the football. They've got a mobile quarterback who is big and sees the field and has got a big arm. Perfect setup for this player. Thomas is going to be able to run the routes he runs well early on and be a huge straw stirring that drink. And as he grows year to year, he'll add things to the tree. Really good fit in terms of scheme. There's an offensive brain running the show. They can block to get him open on his deeper routes. They've got a quarterback who can buy time, who can roll, and who can throw all, like literally all the throws. Which brings me to something. Trevor Lawrence is underrated right now. Like, if you can trade for Trevor Lawrence and he's actually valued as like QB 10, 11 in that area, and he's like half as valuable as a guy. I mean, I'm seeing Justin Herbert way ahead of Lawrence on a lot of these rankings. If I can trade Herbert to get Lawrence and get a little sweetener, I'm all over that for what it's worth. So, you know, I took Thomas basically just because I think he is so incredibly solid. He's good at what he's supposed to be good at, and then you can add the rest. Now, I thought about Worthy, who happens to be the next pick to Izzy. So let's talk about Worthy. The reason I didn't go Worthy over Thomas, obviously you've got similarities. They both get great landing spots. Worthy has a great quarterback, and Worthy could be big time productive. Okay. The thing about Worthy that I don't like is he's really a body catcher. He works really hard not to use his hands. And while his ability to separate will make that a non-factor on some plays, it will hurt him in terms of being targeted in certain situations. It could lower his target volume, especially early in his career. Will this guy develop and become better? He really, it's possible, but I hear comparisons to DeSean Jackson. This guy is not as skilled receiving the football as DeSean Jackson. The rest of it, I can see the comparison. So definitely considered Worthy, would have, you know, thought about trying to maybe move back in to get him, was hoping maybe he'd make it to me with my next pick, not happening. Can't knock the pick, but for me, I just felt Thomas was, it just felt to me that it was going to be tougher for him to miss, to bust. Now, next pick, which is the 11th overall. So just a quick sum up, Harrison, Caleb, Neighbors, Daniels, McCarthy, May, Odunze, Bowers, Brian Thomas, Worthy, and then in the 11th hole, Bauer Club is up and he takes McConkey. I was really happy about that pick because he's not a guy that I was going to be considering with my next pick. I can't really knock the pick. I mean, it's fine. McConkey's a nice prospect. I guess my issue with him is I think he needs to be a volume weapon. I'm not sure if he's going to hold up to volume. I do think he will be good when he's healthy on that team. Next pick up in the 12th spot is Brooks. Jonathan Brooks, love him. Absolutely would have taken him if he gets to me. Considered taking him where I took Thomas. Considered moving back in to take him. But the problem for me with Brooks is I need help right away. I need running back points now, and I don't know if he's a now player. But boy, I like Brooks. Dynasty Rich took Brooks. I was on, I was talking to him when he was on the clock, thought about moving up. I would have been moving up probably to get either Brooks or Benson. My thought was that there's a chance that either of them or maybe like a Bo Nix makes it to me. So I decided not to spend to move up. As it turns out, it was a good move because I have Nix and Benson on the clock right now. And I'm sort of floating the pick to see if anybody wants to pay for it. But probably by the time we speak again, you'll know who I took. And it's, I would say, almost definitely going to be Benson because people in this league just aren't really offering me the kind of deals I want. And hey, good for them. That's smart, probably. So Brooks is the last pick of the first round. Can't knock it. For me, I think Brooks should have been either 10 or 11 and not 12, to be honest. That's the guy I probably would have taken in there. Keon Coleman is next up. So he's the first pick of the second round, 13th overall. Tyler traded into that pick and then sat on the clock for like 10 hours and then took Keon Coleman. I like Keon Coleman, love the landing spot, can't knock the pick at all. I was happy about the pick though, because I'm hoping a running back gets to me. So after that, Izzy is back up. And he takes Pearsall. No way to knock this pick. I'm a big fan of Pearsall. The thing about Pearsall is, A, clearly, unless they move one of their receivers, he's not going to be a high-volume rookie. And then B, again, my problem with Pearsall and the 49ers is I think he's going to be good. I think he's going to be, I think people are going to be talking about Pearsall. Oh, this guy's good. Oh, he's always making plays. And he's going to make a lot of big first downs for this team. And here's the thing about Pearsall. If they're really committed to Brock Purdy, this is a good fit for Purdy. This guy's going to give separation on these short and intermediate routes. And Purdy is a quarterback who absolutely has to have separation. Purdy cannot throw into windows. I'm sorry, he can't. So Pearsall is a good fit for the 49ers. My concern for Dynasty, and the reason I like him more for NFL football than Dynasty, is I think volume is going to get this guy hurt. It's just my instinct. So that's the first 14 picks. I'm up on the board with the 15th pick. And I am almost definitely going to take Benson unless somebody can offer me something to move me off of that. Why I like Trey Benson, before we close out this podcast, and I'll be back, by the way, I'll be back probably, I think I might wait till the end of the third round. Then again, I might come back tomorrow morning and just tell you what the last 12 picks were or something like that. I'll see how it goes. I'll see how much time I have in the morning. I'll see if I wake up in time. But Benson was a guy I was really high on throughout the draft process. He's one of the guys I was on really early. And it's funny, I thought the combine was going to really screw me on Trey Benson. I thought it was going to move him up. And it really didn't. The guy showed up, ran like the effing wind. And, you know, look, people are into data. People are into production. This guy never got an elite workload. This guy didn't get 20 carry games. I think he might have had one. So I understand there's a tendency for people to go, well, this guy's not a 20 carry back. Well, he wasn't a 20 carry back for Florida State. His role the last 2 years, when you look at it, that's almost like mirror images in terms of usage. So I don't know if the coach was looking to protect him, because this guy had a devastating knee injury in 2020. For those who don't know, Trey Benson had something in the area of the Nick Chubb, okay, which is ironic because this guy reminds me of Chubb. I think he runs a lot like Chubb. This guy is a faster Chubb in a lot of ways. Now, does this guy have the contact balance that Nick Chubb had? No, has, excuse me. No, he is not the power runner that Nick Chubb is. He's Chubb light. He's mini Chubb. But let's be fair. Chubb does not have the straight line speed that Trey Benson have, nor does Chubb have the hands. Trey Benson is smooth catching that football, and he transitions after the catch very, very well. I think it is quite possible that one of the stories about this draft class is, how did we miss Trey Benson as a receiver? We'll see. I have a feeling that's going to be the case. Now, granted, Kyler is a tiny little quarterback, and locating the back is not his primary skill. On the other side of the coin, Kyler's moving into the second stage of his career. He's post-ACL himself. It would behoove him to learn how to find the back. So who knows? And obviously Benson is not likely to just jump in and steal the gig this year from Connor, when Connor's strength is, well, one of Connor's strengths is protecting the quarterback. So, you know, Connor, not to mention, Connor ran the ball well last year. I mean, they did not need to go draft Trey Benson. They could have just used Connor for another year. But good move, I think, by Arizona, because now you can use Connor. Let Connor show this guy how to be a professional, and either Connor's going to get hurt or eventually this guy will force Connor out if he's the real deal. It was not a bad way to go. They got Benson for a really nice value. So, you know, for me, it's just, I mean, I really should just pull the trigger on this. This is the guy I wanted to fall to me. I just didn't anticipate that Knicks would be there too. And if I can get somebody to jump up pay for Knicks and then I still get a crack at Benson and I can make a profit, I might take a crack at that. Particularly if the slide's only one spot, because then worst case scenario is I end up with Knicks instead of Benson. Knicks would be an extra quarterback for me and I'd be able to cut a deal. But again, you know, just back to Benson before I close this pot out. There are certain things you look for in running backs. You look for a guy who's got the requisite NFL size, because NFL coaches don't give volume to guys without size in many, many cases. There are exceptions to the rule. We saw that last year. We saw it with the Rams. McVay is a different kind of cat. And by the way, McVay drafted another back. So, you know, for anybody who like just jumped in with both feet on Kyren, you might be getting burned. But Benson is the total package of things we look for. I look for guys with speed. He's got it. I look for guys with size. He's got it. I look for guys who can break tackles. He's got it. I look for guys who can gear back up after they gear down. This guy can do it. I look for guys with straight line speed so he can finish plays. He's got it. I want guys who can pass block. He shows the foundation of it. He needs more work. This is a guy who didn't play a ton of downs, right? But here's the thing. He was clearly the lead back. None of the other backs on Florida State were getting... It wasn't like there was not a co-back with him. There was not, you know, the other backs had 60 touches, 70 touches, 80 touches. They don't believe in overworking their lead back. The philosophy that kept his workload down at Florida State is not following him to his next destination. I strongly urge people to not hang the low workload tag on Trey Benson for a couple reasons. One, he's going to a new place. Two, remember, this guy was a player who came back from a devastating injury, okay? So it's quite possible that they viewed him as a guy that was important to them and they didn't want to just wear him out. Or perhaps they actually cared about the player and they did not want to destroy him. I don't know. But clearly, if you watch the tape, this guy could have handled another 4 or 5 carries a week. It would have been no problem. With Trey Benson, you are getting long speed. You are getting strong inside movement ability. This guy can stop, start, cut in the hole, okay? You are getting hands. You are getting body control. The only thing about Trey Benson, well, there's two things about Trey Benson that give you pause. One is that he had an injury in 2020. He has showed you that he's past it, okay? And then the other thing is there is a certain disconnect at times. I see some hesitation. There are bad reads at times. Folks, college runners, especially guys who do not have a ton of volume, are still finding their way in this, okay? So it is quite possible that this guy will continue to get better in terms of feeling where the hole is and stuff like that, okay? So I would encourage you, if you are like me and Trey Benson is sneaking into that second round, do not be afraid to snatch this guy up over receivers who are taken ahead of him in the NFL draft. You know, for me, he gives me elements of Breece Hall, but he is not the instinctive, good-at-the-game guy that Breece Hall was. Breece Hall's on an entirely another level when it comes, like, neck up. Trey Benson is not Breece Hall from the neck up. But from the neck down, he brings you a lot of the things that Breece Hall does. And one of those things, he doesn't have the active feet that Breece has either, but one of those things is that soft hand and body control in the pass game. So this guy could be sort of a Breece light kind of thing. Again, I want to be careful with this because Breece Hall is so blanking good. I don't want to throw disrespect at the guy, but you know, but again, Breece Hall, I had to trade up to the top spot of the draft to get my hands on that guy. It's the only time I've ever done it in Dynasty. This guy fell to me in the second round, so he doesn't have to be Breece Hall for us to do really well. Not to mention, I mean, there's the last thing I'm going to say on this. You have established quarterback play in Arizona. You now have an elite young outside weapon there. And not to mention, they've got an elite tight end. So teams are not going to be loading up to stop the run. Okay, this is not a bad place for a back, especially if they continue to put the pieces together on this offense. And really, launch year for Benson's probably next year versus this year because of Connor. So just really like the guy in the second round. Now, if you were in my position and you had a quarterback need or quarterbacks have a lot of value and you want to take a guy like Bo Nix and bank on Sean Payton still having enough in the tank to make that whole thing work, I can see that. Anyway, I was here 10 minutes longer than I anticipated. Hope you guys are having fun with all this rookie stuff. I will be back in the next couple days. Feels good to have the Rotobahn pod back up and running. So we'll see you soon. Giddy up. Forget about your house of cards.
Your heart's blown.